You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Pearl Albino. Pearl, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Oh, gosh. Thanks for having me.
So, Pearl, let's talk about how you got involved in the art world as opposed to what you're doing right now. How did you begin to get involved in the art world, in the arts, and if you can go back to when you began to become an art dealer?
Gosh, okay. Let me think. This is a weird situation. I didn't attend high school. I went to a special program in Virginia at Mary Baldwin College that let young girls skip high school completely. So I went from eighth grade to college. And, you know, really what my parents probably should have done was found a really good high school for me where I would have been happy. But at the time I was really rebellious and cutting classes and I just wanted out of school. So we found this place that, you know, you just have to test well, you interview, you get in. So I did that. And while I was in college, I thought I was going to be some business major, but the business professor who was in charge of everything was really sexist. And I fell into art history, which is supernatural for me. So, you know, I guess I like a picture and a story. Like, I live for that. So it was very natural. And when I graduated, I was so young. I was 17, and I knew I wanted to work in New York.
But that's incredible. That seems like that would be difficult going through college at such a young age. You graduated college, and most people graduate high school, in other words, correct?
Yeah, I guess it's a special program. The idea was they started it to, you know, there's that Ophelia myth that girls will start dumbing themselves down when they enter high school to impress boys. So these feminists started up this little program within a women's college. And so at any given time, maybe there are about 50 girls just like you. And that was appealing to me. Like, oh, I won't be the weirdo. I'm going to be, one out of 50. And that made me feel better. So, yeah. But, it's college is not that hard. I think high school is harder because you have how many hours a day of school every day. College, you have class like three times a week, two times a week. You write papers. It's not this constant like grind, I think. And the teachers, I think, appreciate you more in college than in high school. They're overworked. And it wasn't as weird.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
That makes sense to me. I mean, But yeah, and you get to have a much richer experience immediately. So you're graduating, you're 17, you've graduated, and then what?
So I want to go live in the city. And I'm from Jersey, so the city, I mean, we'd always go back and forth when I was little, but it wasn't that far away to me. But my parents would not let me be some 17-year-old just getting an apartment. I had to be in grad school. So I applied to school at NYU, and I was taking classes there, and that was fine. My parents were really happy, like, oh, good, you're settled in. But I knew I wanted to work in the art world. So, you know, I'm around 18 now, and I'm trying to get an internship anywhere. And I really tried, and I would think, like, oh, you know, I'm not the stupidest person in the world. I should be able to work for somewhere for free, and it was really hard. But I finally got in. This is 1993, beginning of 94. And there was a recession going on in the art world. Eventually, I found an internship at Stuck's Gallery. That's where I started. So I was 18. It was very bad times for Stephen Stuck's. So soon, I got hired as the only employee. So I'm this 18-year-old employee. I'm managing his gallery. But what I was really doing was closing down the gallery because, you know, he couldn't afford the rent in Soho anymore.
Right.
And that's how I got my start.
Huh. And so then what happened after? So you began learning, I suppose, about the art world and art galleries through the lens of Stephen Stuck's and that gallery. And then how did you begin to work on your own, or was that many more years?
Oh, many more years. So we closed down the Soho Gallery. And at the time, I mean, it was pretty, you know, looking back, I mean, he still represented Vic Muniz because he discovered him. You know, the time of Andres Serrano and the Starn Twins were over, but still they were, you know, to have to manage closing all of that up, that was, you know, like a big deal for me because I didn't know anything about anything. So for 2 years after that, Stefan worked from his home, private dealing, and I was his assistant there. So he was basically, this is around the time Japanese museums were still buying a lot of work. I mean, they don't anymore, but back then they were buying a lot of Impressionists and Modern Masters, and that's what Stefan did from his home, and I would help him. You know, he would dig up some, you know, painting. I'd have to compile the info and keep track of how much it was and keep track of auction results. And, I mean, it was really primitive time. So this is before the internet. So he would have to get an 8x10 transparency. And that transparency cost like $100. And then I would have to physically, you know, like I have to be the messenger girl, and I would deliver this to some Upper East Side dealer. And
wow.
Yeah, if I had to look up an auction result, you can't use ArtNet. I had to go to the big public library, whip out the art sales index, and like work, you know, get librarians to pull old auction catalogs so I could know if something sold in the past. And
wow,
I did
we're
that
just
for
talking
him.
About the 90s here. We're talking about
yeah,
the
this
90s
is the 90s. Yeah, and I was like a kid. So, and it was kind of nice because I was the kid. So all of these people that I would meet delivering transparencies or going to auction or whatever, you know, I still know them to this day, and they still like have this idea that, oh, I'm still 18 or something. So it's nice, but I did that.
Wonderful. Those were a lot of powerful relationships you were building, and then what happened next?
So I knew he was going to reopen the gallery, and he did. So he reopened in Chelsea. And, you know, at the time, maybe there were only 10 other galleries in Chelsea. And then, of course, I was this little gallery manager, gallery director there. And I was there for, let's see, I worked for Stephen Total from 1994 to 2000. So like 6 or 7 years. So I worked there basically till I was 25. And, you know, you get to a level where, you know, you are doing so much. You know, I did everything at the gallery. I would, you know, you write the press release, you hang the show, you sell the show, you wrap up the show and, you know, ship all the artworks, and you do it again. Like, it was like that. And then also I did the bookkeeping. And I know at some point, you know, I realized, like, oh, my gosh, this gallery life is really so hard. I don't think I ever want a gallery. And that's when I started to realize, you know, you see a lot of consultants and private dealers coming in, and you think, why can't I do that? I see these people doing it. I can do that too. So that kind of planted the seed in my head, but I didn't feel at the time when I was 25 that I could go do that right away. So I went to work for another private dealer. So I worked for Peter Freeman, and, I mean, he really had fantastic, you know, works to deal with. This is all like classic pop and minimalism. So
right.
I did that after Stux.
And it was after working for him that you began to go out on your own?
Not even then. So Elizabeth D. and Carolyn Glasso had a gallery on the same floor as Stux. So I knew these girls. And they got a backer, and they were going to open a ground floor space in Chelsea. So I guess we had done some deals together. I had started to dip my toe into private dealing. Like just... You know, for me, it's super organic. I run into someone, and they were like, oh, you know, I have this Bridget Riley for sale. And I'm like, oh, I think I know someone who wants it. I would do this, you know, a little bit back then. And I had done some business with Carolyn and Elizabeth. And they asked, oh, we need a director. So I thought, oh, ground floor space in Chelsea. You know, that sounds really – I miss working in a gallery. I miss seeing people. That's what I missed most of all. And I wasn't doing that when I was, you know, just doing secondary market work with private dealers. So I went back to work there, and then it wasn't like a good fit. After that, I realized, forget it. I'm going to work for myself, and I will never answer to someone again. So that's when I finally worked for, when was that? That was 2002 that I finally decided just no more. So.
And then what happened next? So then you're in New York City, and it's 2002, and you're beginning to do more of what you had previously done on the side, like you were just saying. If someone
when I was kind of in between jobs, when I was in between Stux or in between Peter Freeman and D. Glasso, those were the times I just would kind of work out deals on my own. So I felt that I could do it if I, you know, really gave it an effort. So around the time I had left D. Glasso, this was like a little bit after September 11. It was a weird time for me. Like my mother had passed away. My boyfriend and I, we bought this raw loft on Broome Street. So we couldn't afford a contractor, so we just fixed it up ourselves. So it was around that time that, you know, we were building our loft, and we were, you know, hanging drywall and, you know, soldering pipes. and I had to figure out how to support us with the art dealing. And I think that was, we were living off the McDonald's dollar menu, so I'd basically have to sell a painting so we could buy more supplies to build. And I think that was kind of good for me. Like, I really realized, like, okay, I have to learn how to make money. So that's how, you know, I started. So I, you know, all these years working for galleries, I knew people, and I'd call up collector friends, I'd run into friends, I'd ask them what their wish lists were. And then, you know, I try to find these things for them. And the whole trick is that it just has to be priced better than auctions or a gallery. You know, they want everything to be discreet. Like, I understood the ground rules, and that's how I started.
And was it a particular kind of work? So in the beginning, when you're, you know, establishing your own, your own company, was it particular kinds of work? Is it things like, that sounds kind of like secondary market, Bridget Riley and things like that, or was it also younger artists?
Yeah, exactly. The Bridget Riley was just, that was just my first little deal I had done by myself. But, I it started out that Stux had discovered some artists that went on to do really well, like Inka Essenhai, for instance. And since I had sold a lot of those paintings to begin with, you know, I knew that kind of collector, and, you know, maybe someone had bought a painting when, you know, for a very little money because they were brave and, you know, they were an early adopter. And then they realized, oh, you know, I need to put the kids, I need to pay for a semester of school for my child, or I need to, you know, pump some money back into my business, and they would resell through me. So I started out with things that I had previously sold, and then it just branched out into other things. But it did seem to be a lot of, like late 90s artwork.
And then that kept growing, and you stayed with late 90s artwork or more or less from then until now?
It's, as I said, it's really organic. I don't really, set out to specialize in anything. It's what seems to come my way. And it also, there are collectors who are active and less active, so you kind of ride their waves too. Like, I, you know, some collectors and they collect only images of women. Or I know some feminist collectors and they want to buy work by women artists. Or, you know, you have someone who's doing a run on 80s work because they think it's undervalued. Or it's like that. Or, oh, I know someone who's, you know, really loves classic minimalism and I'll work really hard in that area. It's, and sometimes something comes your way and you know that it's good and you know that you can sell it. So, you know, that's kind of fun. I like it best when collectors have specific tastes. You know, there are a lot of collectors
now. And you mean, and they're looking for specific things as opposed to you introducing themselves?
Not like that. I just like it when someone has an opinion. Those are my favorite collectors, that they know what they like, and they're well-informed, and they have a passion for that, as opposed to there are a lot of people who buy something because, you know, they're flippers. They want to know what's hot and what they can make money off of. And I find those people really hard to sell to. Like, they're never happy. But, yeah, my favorite collectors
right.
are the ones who, yeah, they have an interest, and they don't care what other people think. So.
And in the time that you've been doing that, you know, up till now, you're mostly looking for other collectors. Are you also developing relationships with younger artists? Do you go to studio visits or anything like that? Or is it more looking for the art through other galleries and collections?
No, definitely. I have a lot of artist friends, and they're a great resource for me as well. I mean, I know it's a gift to be friends with artists. It's really nice to go to a studio and see how people make things and what they're thinking and what their influences are. It's really so fun for me. So I don't... You know, I mean, especially now that I'm in Jersey, I'm not going on studio visits all the time. But it's usually I'll have an artist friend, and they'll introduce me to one of their friends. It usually works out like that. You know, like, it's our little community. You know, sometimes I'm looking for something, like, you know, the collector who's looking for something young, something specific. Like, I had someone who's looking for something for a lobby but needed a very big work and had to be a certain price range. And, you know, I'll get an idea of his vibe, and then I'll talk to my artist friends. Like, okay, well, you know, help me out. And that's how I find artists. It's more like that.
And the artist friends can even point you to other artists you're saying
yeah.
that they think is appropriate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very exciting. And so now I know you you had a child and things are changing. Is the direction of the company the same, or are you focusing on different things as you move into the future?
I still am working, so I'm grateful for that. And the whole time I was pregnant, I was, you know, working pretty decently. But yeah, now I don't know. I don't have less time to give because I'm always feeding him. But I'm sure that will soon, you know, level out, and then I can go back into the city more regularly. I have these fantasies that actually, you know, I can take him to the galleries with me. But I think that's not good. I think that makes your kid is going to end up hating art, and he'll totally rebel. So I can't do that to him. But yeah, I'm happy to. You know, I feel like I worked so hard all of these years. So, I mean, let's see, I've been working since I'm 18, and now I'm 41. So that's kind of I feel like I worked so hard that it's my reward to be able to, you know, be a pretty, you know, on-it mom.
Right, that's true. That's true. It's been great talking to you about all this. You know, I wish you well for how things move forward. I just wanted to ask a few more questions, and one that I always ask is, are you reading a particular book now? Or anything. Could be off topic, but I always ask this.
Okay, so the one book I'm reading is, oh gosh, what's the full title? It's something like Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Your Son. And it's only because I only had a sister. My practice child that I've raised was Stefan Stux's daughter, and that's she's a girl, Alva. So I don't know much about little boys. So I've been reading that.
That sounds good. That's the way to change the world, I think, reading books that hopefully are sensitive like that so you can make him a wonderful, sensitive man.
Well, I don't know. There's so many questions I have about, you know, masculinity. Sometimes I feel like there's more space to be a girl. You can be a quiet girl or a loud girl or a tomboy, but if you're a boy, I always worry, oh, no, do you have to really be some sort of, alpha male I have no clue. I have no clue, so I'm just reading this. But generally, a lot of it makes sense. My mother was a psychiatrist, so, you know, I'm used to hearing all of that stuff. That might be a reason why I went to the art world, because we did really like to look at artwork together, and, you know, she'd point out everything crazy about it, so.
That's wonderful. So that came from your mother, the interest in the arts.
Yeah, the arts for her were something educated people knew about. So she knew that it was important. But of course, you know, we go to a museum and all she does is point out everything, you know, remotely phallic, so.
That's wonderful. She sounds, she was wonderful. It's great to have that kind of introduction to art in such a spirited way, I would imagine. Pearl, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.